would be like, oh my god, I can't believe you're telling people about the show again. And I'm like, yeah, I am. Because it's amazing. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
I can't really handle confused. The 10 nominations.
Really well, is that more embarrassing, maybe?
What we've seen today in terms of nominations is wild.
And while I'm over that, I will never be over Anna the Musical.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Off to Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, it is the much anticipated 2022 Tony nominations. It seems crazy that this is happening because I don't think we thought that there would be a 2020 Tony nominations. And here we are with the 2021 Tony Awards happening. And now we are in like a full real season for the first time in 2 years.
It's so funny, I think, because early 2020, we were talking about that 2019-2020 season in our way too early Tony nominations. And we're here at the 2022 Tony Award nominations recap episode, still talking about some of the same shows from two plus years ago. And I feel like this is like a good like kind of wrapping up. Actually, Sing Street still hasn't happened yet, so never mind. But like,
we'll get there eventually.
For the most part, like all the shows that we talked about then like made it to this season, and we finally like get to like kind of like wrap up their story this year. So it's exciting.
You know what's also kind of crazy? On day of recording, which we'll preface right now to timestamp this, we are recording on May 9th, the day of the Tony nominations, mm-hmm. and this will be released on the 16th, obviously. But last night, Aaron Tveit played his final performance in Moulin Rouge, and I feel like that truly is the full circle.
You're absolutely right. Because we saw that in previews, and it's out of town, before we started the podcast. Even something like Six, very early on the podcast, we took a road trip to see it in Boston. And now it's kind of like the culmination of its story. So because of that, we're drinking tonight. We are.
This is a full glass, guys.
I have some ice in here, but it's a full glass. What are you drinking, Tara? Tell us what you're drinking.
So we thought to keep the tradition alive, we should be in our pajamas and also drink to celebrate the Tony Awards. And this time we are both drinking Canadian because what else would we do? Absolutely. So this is something new that I found, which is from the Niagara Cider Company. And it is a peach and Chardonnay flavored apple cider. And I have to say, very light on the peach flavor, but very refreshing. So very refreshing. I recommend.
Wow, it sounds really good. When you described that to me before we hopped on, I'm like, I want that. I tonight have a Somersby Rosé Cider. So a classic. I've drunk this before. You can't go wrong.
No.
So cheers to the nominees and the snubs tonight. Here we go.
Yes. Before we jump into the nominees and the snubs, we do think that we should do a bit of an update because the last time we talked about nominations was in our Way Too Early Tony nominations, and that episode came out in February, but I'm pretty sure we recorded that end of January. So it's been quite a long time. And in that episode, we were talking about, you know, some shows that were either having like out of towns or off Broadway or whatever it might be, wondering if they would transfer into the season. And we were right to say the season was pretty much locked when we did that episode. Nothing came in. It was too crowded, as is. Actually, I would say like the plays went offbeat and a lot of plays came in after that. Again, to just talk about the Tonys in general, we are not really talking about plays. However, for anyone that's listening, I heard the biggest snubs were in the play categories this year, so let us know what you think.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, we never pay as much attention to plays, and especially this year, it was hard enough with this kind of funky season that we were having. But I have to say, with the nominations this morning, I don't think I was truly shocked by anything for musical on the musical side. There are some, like, upsetting snubs, maybe, but I don't think I'm, like, truly shocked by anything that happened this morning.
Yes, I would agree with that. Again, heard there were shocks on the play side of things, but I do think the musicals was pretty much what we expected, minus a few things, which we will get into, but something else that we didn't know when we recorded our Way Too Early Tony nominations episode was the life of the girl from the North Country. And since then, Girl from the North Country reopened at the Belasco. I don't understand why they left to go back into the Belasco.
Was there something play in between?
No.
It was probably just budget. It was probably literally just a budget thing. They probably just couldn't afford to keep running in those, like, dead kind of, like, January, February, March months.
Well, that was the same time the Doubtfire took off.
Absolutely.
And they came back, too. I don't know if they'll survive later, but that's a different conversation. But yeah, Girl from North Country.
Supposed to have.
Actually, in this time, we did find out that there will be a Doubtfire cast recording, and we can't wait to hear what the hell. That's really what
we're here
for.
And only that. Yeah.
But Girl from North Country, back at the Belasco, this time a limited run. And they did get 7 nominations, which, again, we will get into this, but this was a show that when we did our way too early 2020 Tony nominations, it had, like, all the nominations. So
yeah, we really thought it was going to run away with a lot of things. Because based on, like, critical reception from its off-Broadway run, from its Toronto run, of course. Even though we were kind of more tepid on it.
Yeah, still am.
But yeah, I can't say I'm a fan. But coming into this season, it's kind of like third or fourth, even maybe fifth string.
Yes.
Whereas we really thought it was, it had the potential to be even best new musical in 2020 mm-hmm. if the season had gone properly.
Right. And then something else that happened was the eligibility for shows being nominated was pushed. It was supposed to be April 28th. It was pushed to May 4th, which then changed the Tony nominations to this morning because of COVID. Of course.
We'll talk about that article you sent me this morning.
I saw an article on Broadway World today about the nominating committee, and there is normally, did it say 54? I believe it said 54 nominators. It ended up being 29, and some of those were people that, like, pulled out because they had relation to shows, so they weren't allowed to vote at the end of the day. They do list the 29 nominators in there, including Anne Harada, which was exciting to both you and I.
Yeah.
There is a little, like, quote here on Broadway World on the article. I'm not sure who said it, but it says, I was supposed to see shows and actors were out. One nominator who decided to bow out this season said, then I had exposure. It was all too much. And I feel like that's a very real reality, I want to say, going forward, because, you know, COVID is staying around forever, and whether it becomes like a flu or a cold is one thing, but I do think that people, I mean, we've had this conversation, like, off the mic many times, that industries are changing now. If you are sick, you cannot perform. You know, our last episode with Jenny, where she told us, you know, Canadians are hiring understudies now where they never did before. So, you know, you change your tickets because you want to see someone that is performing in a show. So you potentially nominate them. They're out because of COVID, but then you get exposed and now you can't attend anything. I got to pull my entire vote now. So it's kind of a crazy time we are living in.
It is. And I think maybe this will impact the way shows open, and maybe they won't be so heavy at the end of the eligibility period, because it gives voters, or nominators particularly, voters have a bit more time, but nominators particularly, a very short window of time to get in all these shows that are opening just under the wire, because mm-hmm. they probably nominated this weekend to get nominations out today. And they had to have seen these shows that opened maybe 2 days before with the full cast.
Yeah.
It's not a tenable situation.
No. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I follow a lot of, like, theater reviewers and critics on Twitter. And I know that the month of April, something crazy, like 18 shows opened, musicals and plays. So you're expecting, one is, like, theater critics go to these two to get their reviews in on time for opening night. And at the same time, there are obviously nominators there. So to think of, like, 17 shows that you're potentially trying to nominate, and if you get COVID, you can't do anything. Like, you can't see any of those. So
you're at a commission for a week minimum.
Yeah.
Before you're back in the theater.
So I agree. I do think that maybe this will hopefully help with the nominating in the future, because I'm thinking of a show like POTUS, where Julianne Hough had COVID, and I literally think the reason they changed the eligibility was for her.
Was
not
for
that she got nominated, but I think it was for POTUS because they were a star.
Julianne Hough is a star.
But they were concerned that, you know, it's a very small show. If she gives it to anybody else in the cast, like, all of the women are out. So
absolutely.
It's a crazy, crazy situation. And, Yeah, so that leads us to today and the Tony nominations. And I texted you last night and I said, you know, the two categories that are going to be the most up in the air and ones that we completely got wrong are the featured categories. And I was 100% right.
Look, I want to shout out myself. Because I got three people in that category. In the featured actress category.
Did I? And not me. Wait, actress or actor?
Actress, I got three. And an actor, I got two. So...
Actress, I got one. And actor... Where's my featured actor? Actor, I got one.
So, shout out to me. No. It's hard. I always find the featured actor and actress categories hard. Because it's... anyone, really. Like, you can pretty much know who the leads are going to be, but the featured category is anyone. And for a show you're not familiar with, you don't even know who kind of has a standout role or not.
Yes, and I was going to say, too, I think that there are also, in the featured category, normally, like, one or two people that are the leaders of the pack, and you know that they're going to get a nomination, but everybody else is, like, completely up in the air. So I think we are safe to start at featured actor in a musical category. And the person who was the leader of the pack obviously got nominated. Mr. Matt Doyle, I am so happy about this nomination. You know, all of his friends and family on Instagram and Twitter, like, posting about it. This is someone that, as I said on our last episode talking about him, he is, like, constantly replacing. And to have him get this nomination for... this role, I think, means so much to him, means so much to the company, and means so much to everybody. And I did see him do, like, a little bit of a live stream this afternoon with Theater Mania, and he was saying, you know, my nomination is great and all because, you know, I got cast in this role in summer of 2019, and here we are at 2022, finally, like, living this dream, which is so exciting.
I want to... talk about the precedent that was set by the love of my life, Jonathan Bailey.
Jonathan Bailey.
I can always bring it back.
Do you think Jonathan Bailey reached out to Matt today? I hope so.
I don't know. You know, I wonder when they even started rehearsing on Broadway, when he got cast, if that was something, there was communication there. I don't know, maybe. But Jonathan Bailey, who he's been discussed, he played this role. He was the first person to really play this role in the West End, was nominated for a Tony, for an Olivier there. And then won the Olivier. And Matt Doyle is kind of like on that track right now. He's got the nomination. And now we'll see if he can get the win. If he can match Jonathan Bailey. Something interesting though is that at the Olivier's of that year, there were three actors from Company nominated in the featured actor. And here we've only got Matt.
Well, it's interesting because I think post our episode recording, there was lots of conversation around Claiborne Elder and whether he would be nominated.
He's
for
my other person that I have in, like, my giant chart that I've created, that I had from our way too early Tony nominations, and he was the other person I was thinking about. And yeah. I believe he, Richard Fleischman, I believe, who played that part in the West End, did get a nomination. So there was precedent set for that. But I just think, you know, this category, we got one completely wrong, as we said. And so it is quite crowded. And it seems people were pushed out by actors from Paradise Square, which...
Let's talk about Paradise Square, because I can't handle the 10 nominations.
I'm really and we should have Canadian Pride, because Garth Drabinsky really shepherded this.
I want to talk about Paradise Square for a second, and it's obviously going to come up because, as I said, 10 nominations.
This is insane to me. Insane.
But this was wild when I was watching the nominations live this morning. I'm like, sorry, who? And I'm sure that they give lovely performances in Paradise Square. But I just have, like, a bad taste in my mouth about this entire production. Because we've read such horror stories of how there is zero money left in this production.
Yeah, the COVID protocols, the rumors about the COVID protocols, the rumors about, you know, the lack of funds being available to pay cast members.
Yes.
I was scrolling on TikTok this morning, getting people's input and feedback, and someone was saying, you know, why isn't Paradise Square advertising? And I'm like, they don't have the money. They do not have... money to be paying for commercials or to be, you know, taking out a full page in the New York Times. They're running on fumes. And maybe this will help them. I don't know. But the budget is not there.
No, the budget is not there. There's also, you know, like...
Isn't that crazy? Someone who was convicted of fraud and the show that they're producing is having money troubles?
I mean, I just think it's like comedy in general, because we talk about Scott Rudin, right? And Scott Rudin, like, rightfully so... was he kicked out of Musician? He left. But, like, well, he was not welcome back.
But I mean, we can talk about Scott Rudin, but I do think Scott Rudin is still making money from the Music Man. Just because he's 100%. Not public-facing producing that show anymore doesn't mean he's not still, you know, taking his cut. So...
But, like, what's the difference between Garth Dubrinsky and Scott Rudin?
Okay, I do think there's a slight difference. I do think there's a slight difference there. And this is not to defend Garth Dubrinsky, but I don't... And maybe, I don't know, but I haven't heard quite...
No, the allegations are not the same.
The allegations about Garth Dubrinsky.
But he went to jail!
He went to prison. You're absolutely right. And I'll speak... I haven't seen Paradise Square, but I have seen Suzetska
makes its way into so many conversations.
Because it's so funny. Okay. Maybe if people haven't listened before or haven't heard before, this is maybe like 2017-ish, 2016, in Toronto. Talk about an advertising budget. You could not turn on the radio for 10 minutes without hearing a commercial for the musical Suzetska, produced by Garth Dubrinsky. And
like, said exactly like that, Suzetska, produced by Garth Dubrinsky.
There were posters on every subway station, everywhere. And I was like, whatever. And then by the end of it, I was like, do I need to see Suzetska? So I ended up getting free tickets. So I took a friend. And
the correct way to do that is free tickets.
It was free tickets. And it starred Victoria Clark and Montego Glover, who gave wonderful performances in it. But it was kind of wild. It was a wild show to me. And something that I thought of recently was... Garth Dubrinsky produced Ragtime here in Toronto, which was obviously a huge success, and then, you know, went on to New York and had huge success there and is, like, very critically acclaimed. And I do think he's trying to recapture the Ragtime success, because Suzetska even, and as far as I know, Paradise Square are these kind of, like, big cast shows with, like, different family, like, historical drama, like, feel, like, emotional, kind of, like, intertwining stories kind of thing. And I don't know. I'm just very confused about Paradise Square. And maybe we just need to see it.
Well, okay. Also, an update. I am going to New York at time of episode release in 3 days. And I have no tickets bought because, one, like, you know, things are expensive. And I'm really hoping to, like, TKTS it, get some, like, rush tickets, like, all that jazz.
TKTS Paradise Square. I think you can TKTS Paradise Square.
Two... Again, as I stated, COVID rampant right now. So if I know that someone's going to be out of a show, like, I probably won't go that day if it's someone that I really want to see, because, like, this is the world we live in. I can avoid that. Although, love our understudies and swings. Like, if I'm going to see someone specific, I would try not to.
Absolutely.
Third thing, I just don't know morally if I can go see Paradise. We love Shalina. We love Shalina.
Yes, past guest. Yeah, excited for her to be working. I mean, we'll get there, but, like, Jacquina is apparently giving this really amazing performance. I know. It has 2 featured actor nominations.
Which is full circle. This is where we started. So,
the nominators saw, like, good things about this show.
Did they, though? Or did Garth pay them off with all of the money that is no longer in the show?
I can't imagine that. I can't imagine they were paid off. I think it would be very easy for them to just completely overlook Paradise Square. Because it has a not good reputation.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me. I was going to say, like, it's Out of Town didn't get great reviews. And even its Broadway didn't get great reviews. So, anyway, to bring this back to where we started of Best Featured Actor in a Musical, the 2 men nominated for Paradise Square are AJ...
Sorry for taking us off track like this.
AJ Shively and Sydney DuPont. And as I said, I'm sure they give lovely performances, but I have no comment at this time. Not to finish that category. Steph, you did get another person here right.
And the sole representative of his show, the sole representative of Funny Girl, Jared Grimes.
We'll talk about that also.
I mean, we'll get there because many of my mistakes are in predictions are coming. But
mine too.
But I did call Jared Grimes in this category. I love a tap dance. I love a tap dance. And Jared Grimes is really the star of the tap dancing. Choreography, they didn't get this nomination, but choreography is shared, the credit is shared between two people. You know, your typical jazz choreographer and a tap choreographer because of the tap in this show. And I just think he's a star. And I'm happy to be right about this. And I'm also happy about this fifth nominee because I did mention him and I'm very happy about...
I mean, the representation in the feature category for A Strange Loop is really, I think, a surprise in a good way.
Yeah. For me, like, I mean, it's hard because we haven't seen it, but it's hard because, you know, besides Usher, everyone is dressed kind of similarly and kind of blends in and out of each other. And they're playing different people, but they're, you know, playing his consciousness. So you wonder if they would pick someone out. And they pick two people out. And they picked John Andrew Morrison, who his like breakout moment on the cast recording for me is the song Periodically, where he plays Usher's mother. And so much of like what hits me about that cast recording and that story is the kind of internalization of what his parents are saying to him, and to have him represent his mother and for them to be singing this song together. I'm really happy he got nominated.
Yeah, I agree. I think there has been a lot of press around A Strange Loop recently. And I think it's interesting because, again, when we recorded our Way Too Early Tony nominations episode, we weren't sure what critics would think of this show. It is rave reviews.
Absolutely.
As it should be. Like... This
Pulitzer
cast
Prize winning.
Pulitzer Prize winning. Drama. This cast recording is like so masterfully done. We are getting a new Broadway cast recording, which is really exciting.
I have a prop actually for this. For my birthday, Tara got me the libretto of winner of the Pulitzer Prize, Michael R. Jackson, A Strange Loop. And so
I knew before I knew.
A recommendation is to listen to that cast recording.
Yes.
And as you like go through it, because magic stuff.
Yeah, it's so good. But yeah, I agree with you. Periodically was like one of the first songs that I think you told me to listen to when you started to listen to this cast recording. And for anyone interested, the NPR Tiny Desk A Strange Loop concert, so good.
They sound amazing. They sound so
good.
Amazing.
And they talk about Periodically specifically because he has been, John Andrew Morrison has been singing this for so many years at this point. So it just feels like tied to his identity is what he said. So it's such a great moment in the cast recording. I'm sure it's a wonderful moment on stage. And yeah, I'm so happy about this nomination. And to continue the Strange Loop love, let's move on to our featured actress category. This
Absolutely.
Is huge because she is the first trans person nominated for a Tony Award in this role. And it is Elle Morgan Lee, who, again, we haven't seen A Strange Loop, so we're not 100% sure how much she has to do because the thoughts have so much to do in the entire show, which is, I think, a discussion... Again, we'll talk about six when we get there. Of should there be an ensemble award? Because
and like who should it include? And who should it include?
Totally. Because something like six, where there are six women that are on stage for the entire same amount of time for the show, and they each get their own song, like to me, don't waste your time putting them in feature or lead, which they didn't. Put them in the ensemble together. And same thing with like A Strange Loop. The thoughts are on stage, you know, the same amount of time as Usher. They obviously don't have as much to do as he does, but it's kind of like equal.
How do you
stage
pick
time.
One out necessarily? Yeah. Like, how do you say this one versus that one when they're kind of performing as as a group? Yeah, it's hard.
So it's hard for us to speak to what she does in this show because it's not like 100% clear, like on a cast recording when you listen. As it is with, like, a Periodically, let's say. Mm-hmm. So I have heard and I have read in reviews of A Strange Loop that she is fantastic in the show, as well as all of the other thoughts. But just to see representation on a Tony Award stage is, like, really exciting.
It's very exciting.
But other than that, we were so wrong in this category. Like, so wrong.
Excuse me. I would like to shout out Jane Hudichel, who I selected. So
yeah, and your reasoning for her, because like she's been nominated previous times, was 100% correct.
Yeah, and the Music Man, I really thought the Music Man was gonna get less love than it ended up getting. But
even still, it got less love than Paradise Square and MJ. So.
Okay, those got 10 nominations. We'll talk about it. We haven't even gotten to MJ. I really did not think.
Oh.
I think Funny Girl ended up replacing it as, like, least loved revival. And I think Funny Girl opening benefited The Music Man.
That's true. I stand corrected. I had two people correct in this category. So we were.
Did you pick Shoshana? Did you
pick Shoshana? I did pick Shoshana.
I had three people correct.
Wow. And while we're at Shoshana, first time nominee, Shoshana Bean. I don't know that she should be nominated for this performance specifically because I have read that she has zero to do. She sings a fantastic solo towards the end of the show. But every single review, every single Broadway World board post I've read about Mr. Saturday Night is that she needs more to do. And she is working with like a mediocre Jason Robert Brown nominated score, but a mediocre one. So, yeah. I don't know, but I'm thrilled that she's there. And then, I mean, we said Girl from the North Country, but we did not pick the correct person from Girl from the North Country.
We've gone Kimber Sprawl, right?
Yes. And Jeanette Bayredell was nominated for Mrs. Nielsen, which is a role that I forget
about. She's the one having the affair with the owner, with the husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I know. I don't even know what she sings. I can't remember.
I don't remember either. I remember what the Kimber Sprawl character sings. Ooh. Like, I felt like she had really a standout moment early in the show. But I don't quite remember what Mrs. Nielsen was doing.
Yeah. And then our other two nominations, and I would like to shout out myself because Jen Simard was on my long list.
Jen Simard's on the long list too, yes. And she's so funny. She's so funny. This is not her first nomination. I think it's her second.
But this is wild that she's nominated for this.
I know, like, I know.
Patty. We knew.
Yeah, sorry, we forgot.
We've been new.
Patty. The company got the double nomination in this category. The Paradise Square of the category, if you will. Jen Simard, I believe her previous nomination was for Disaster.
The Seth Rudetsky.
She was like a nun. Yeah. And she's so funny. She is so funny. I'm so happy for this.
Speaking of Seth Rudetsky for a second, I think it still lives on YouTube. He did Game Night one time with, like, the cast of Company. It was, like, Matt Doyle, Chris Siebert, Jen Simard, I want to say, like, Greg Hildreth. Oh, my God. I have never cried laughing so hard in that crew of people. It was so funny, so I highly recommend that. Actually, I'll put it in the description if it still lives on YouTube. But I agree. I think this is, like, such a fun nomination. I also, like, can we talk about the fact that she has understudied Patty? Like, has this ever happened that, an understudy has...
That's so true. She's nominated it for her own character, and also the character she understudies is also nominated.
So,
I mean, typically, if you're nominated for a role, you're not really covering other roles in the show. For the most part.
I think this was, like, an outstanding circumstance.
Yes. Yeah, especially, you know, you have an actress like Patty being out for a week, and you don't want to, let's say, compromise the experience of the audience in any way. Mm-hmm. You say, you know what, we have another actress in the show who's also a showstopper, and if we just shift things around a little bit...
And we read that Jen's Joanne was, like, outrageous.
Yes, she's a little young for the part, I think, at this still, but, like... She's so funny. She's so good. I think it would be so much fun.
Yeah. We have to go back because I realized we didn't pick our winners. So let's do featured actress first and then featured actor. So
absolutely.
I think it's really hard, but I do think that Patty still has this in the bag.
I think for both of these categories, I'm going Company. So I'm going Patty.
Well, I was
going
to say, I think, and I'm so sorry once again to the two men from Paradise Square, but I think nominating both of them cemented Matt Doyle's win.
Yes, yes. You know, it's interesting because it's 29 people nominating, but it's, you know, hundreds of people voting.
Yeah.
So who knows if the sentiment, maybe this, like, 29 people sample just really loved Paradise Square. I don't know. But yeah, I think, like, the consensus for these two categories, for me, I think it's going to be Company for both.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and we thought this back in February.
This is who we picked, and way too early. So even though we didn't get the categories correct, we got the winners. Someone we forgot to talk about was David Paymer. Sorry, we were really on about David Paymer. In the way too early, no Tony nominations and nothing.
Yes, David Paymer, who was playing the same character he played in Mr. Saturday Night Movie, was reprising his role in the musical. Not a nomination. We really thought if someone was going to meet Matt Doyle, it was going to be David
Paymer. David Paymer. We were really on that train because he got nominated for an Oscar. No.
Sorry to David Paymer. Sorry to you. But I think he'll live. Moving on to a category that we were 100% right in. And to me, this
was like a
lock as soon as these shows came out.
You know, let's start with someone who got their show's only nomination in this category, Rob McClure. I think he was vulnerable here. I think he was maybe he was number five.
We are talking about Best Actor in a Musical. Sorry. And I do think that, again, I do remember saying, and I remember you telling me, like, not to degrade myself, because I thought for a second there would be a Doubtfire Score nomination, because I really didn't know what we were in for in the season.
You know, sometimes I watch that video, and I was like, what was I talking about? But it was about a Doubtfire Score. It was that.
I do think, you know, we've talked about the Tootsie of it all. We've talked about, unfortunately, I'm not going to say unfortunately because we don't actually know, but like the Some Like It Hot of it all that's coming in the fall. But I think it was correct to only give a Doubtfire nomination to Rob McClure. He is, whatever you want to say about the show, whatever you want to say about, you know, Another Man in a Dress musical, Rob McClure is working so hard 8 times a week, and I'm sure he deserves this. So.
I love him as a performer. Chaplin, shout out to
and
Chaplin.
And as a person, honestly.
Yeah, he seems like, great. And his feud with Amtrak.
His feud with Amtrak during his run of Beetlejuice is something we will never forget. So, congrats to Rob McClure. And then everybody else, you know, we expected Hugh Jackman. We expected Billy Crystal. We expected Miles Frost. So I'll come back to you in a second, Miles Frost. And we expected Jaquel Spivey.
Yeah.
While we're on Jaquel, I just want to say, again, go watch that NPR Strange Loop performance, because for those of us who have been living with the Larry Owens cast recording for, 2.5 years now? I don't know that we thought that someone could match that energy. Mm. Oh my God, Jaquel, like, his voice is crazy.
He sounds amazing. Really, that NPR, I think, does a Strange Loop, it's already amazing, but it does a Strange Loop so many favors. It advertises the show so, so, so well. I'm really excited to see what happens with him. I don't know about you, but I believe I picked him when we, as our winner.
You know, I went with Hugh, but I really think in many categories, this is a Strange Loops to lose.
I agree. The other person I could go with here is Miles Frost. So it's so funny, the two kind of newcomers, we've written off Rob McClure. Who else? Billy Crystal and Hugh Jackman. Congratulations on your nomination. But I really think it's between these two newcomers. The video
At time of record, it is last week, they released the opening number of MJ the Musical. This is a show, if you remember when we talked about it in February, I was like so against MJ.
Why does it exist?
And I'm still
kind of
against MJ on like principle. But watching this clip, I was like, oh my God, I think I need to see MJ.
I think
it was so smart of them to put out this clip right before the Tony nominations eligibility cut off. It was so smart to do that. Miles Frost is a star in this number. The choreography, the way that it's shot, I texted you and I stand by this. If they're going to do a pro shot of a bio musical, it should be MJ, because this felt like a documentary. It was amazing. Like, I am obsessed with like his interpretation.
Well, let's talk about Christopher Wheeldon, who is the director director and choreographer of the show. I've been lucky enough, he's done some work with the National Ballet of Canada, so I've been seeing his work here before I've seen his Alice in Wonderland, which is fine. But something that I seen of his that I loved was his Winter's Tale, a Shakespeare adaptation. I saw it with a friend. I absolutely was obsessed with it. Just the way it interpreted story through movement. And, you know, his American in Paris was, the choreography was fairly well reviewed. But I think this is a bit of a departure for him in terms of dance styles, because even American in Paris is very balletic versus this, which is, as far as we know from what we saw from this Beat It clip, and if it's after what Michael Jackson's style was, which is kind of like boogaloo popping kind of style, hip hop more like street style, it's not in his wheelhouse that we know him well for. So I'm like, okay, Chris, like what, like, let's see what you can do. I'm excited. Remember when we sat a row behind him when we saw Daggy Little Pill?
Never forget that.
Never forget.
Sat a row behind a double-time nominee. I mean, forget choreography. He's also nominated for director, which is, I think it's such a smart move to have, again, such a dance-heavy show, I assume, like MJ, because just thinking of MJ in general is such a dance-heavy, like, history. So to have such a dance-heavy show and to have your choreographer also be your director, I feel like is very smart. And I do want to bring
in... Those things are so entwined. And so the vision is all, like, one person's vision instead of having to collaborate.
And I do want to bring in, this is the only time that we are going to talk about plays, but someone else that was nominated for Best Director as well as Best Choreographer, Camille A. Brown, for Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Isn't Enough. You know, we have talked about her previously for, it was Choir Boy, right?
She also,
Choir Boy is coming to Toronto.
Yes,
so
Canadian
excited.
Stage, I believe. She also, I believe, choreographed Once on This Island. So really, like, really great. Great work. Anything I've seen of hers has been wonderful.
And again, like, we don't know anything about For Colored Girls, except for, and I do want to talk about this because I think it's kind of interesting. For Colored Girls set a closing date. And since that closing date, Ayanna Prescode, who I follow on Twitter, she has a podcast on the Broadway Podcast Network. She does a lot of reviews. She's done stuff for Variety. She sort of like made a campaign over the weekend to get as many women of color to go see For Colored Girls as possible.
And, like, paying for their tickets.
Yes, and it picked up traction from, like, Stephanie J. Block. It picked up traction from, like, a lot of actors. And they ended up setting up, via telecharge, like, a gifted place where you could buy tickets for women of color to go see this musical. Or, sorry, this play. And, one, I think it is so interesting to see, like, the power of theater Twitter because, wow, that many people got behind it. And two, are we living in a time where something like that can save shows and have them run further? Because, you know, yes, they set a closing date, then this, like, influx of tickets came, and now they have all these nominations at the Tony Awards. Mm. Like, could this show be saved? So, I don't know. I think it's, like, really interesting that this has all happened so quickly.
For women of color, you know, sometimes theater can feel like quite inaccessible. I don't necessarily know if for the most part they're seeking out theater or if it feels like it is for them. And so this is a show that is so well reviewed, so important. You know, it is, you know, for colored girls, and to make it accessible or to seek out audience members who wouldn't necessarily go to it independently or on their own, I think is so powerful and so wonderful. And if you can expand your audience in this way, if you can get more people, if you can think about who do I want to see this and, you know, find ways for that to happen, I think that can only be good for theater and for the life of the show.
Yeah, and then that being said, like, thrilled for double nominee Camille A. Brown.
Absolutely.
Because she first of all, seems like the coolest person ever. I, again, have read, the only reviews I've read of a play have been for this, and I've heard that it is amazing and needs to be seen. So, but back to our actor nominations. I agree with you. I think that this is kind of between, like, Miles Frost and Jaquel. And, you know, like, there are still whispers of this could be a Hugh or Billy Crystal,
but I don't think so.
I don't know. I did hear that, like, Mr. Saturday Night is pretty good.
Okay. What I've heard is that there's a very specific audience for this show.
Yes, it's the Jewish audience.
50
like,
plus.
Like, the Jewish, 50 like, 50-plus audience.
And, you know, I mean, not every show is for everyone. Some shows are for some people.
And I did say to you, like, where else could you go right now to see a 90-minute stand-up routine by Billy Crystal?
Yeah.
Nowhere but Broadway. Absolutely. Like, that is the only place. So if that's your thing, then great. But there are much more, I mean, again, haven't seen any of these shows yet, but there are much more interesting performances on stage. Who is your winner?
I think I'm going to stick with what I predicted before. I'm going to go with Jaquel Spivey. I think this is, I think, going to be the favorite show. It's going to be the most winning show of the most nominated show. And I think it's going to end up being the most winning show of the night. And I think it's such, like, it's the performance in the center of it that is so important. And I think they're going to choose to honor that performance.
I agree. I do think, again, as I said, as far as I'm concerned, every category that A Strange Loop is nominated in, it is their award to lose. Maybe not featured, but, like, there's a chance. There's always a chance. With 11 nominations, they clearly lead the pack in the Tony Awards this year, and I feel like rightfully so. And I don't know. I think, as we had just said, you know, like, Miles and Jaquel both making their Broadway debuts and being nominated for Tony Awards for the Broadway debuts, like, damn. Like, there is talent on stage right now. So it's really, other, like, whatever happens, I think both of them should be, like, so excited that this is happening in general.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, moving on to Best Actress, which is really where we messed up. We really messed up.
I'm going to start with my embarrassment. Not only did I nominate this person, I picked them as my winner. And I think we're going to have a deep conversation about this, but I picked Beanie Feldstein as my winner.
Obviously, let's talk about Funny Girl. Let's get into it.
I think also, number one, we came from a place when we've reported. Love. Well, we come from a place of love, but we came from a place where we were judging Funny Girl kind of reputation only without any firsthand experience of it.
And now, before we even watched the movie.
Exactly. Now we've seen the movie, we've read reviews, we've read, you know, the discourse from other people. And I think it turns out that Funny Girl was not revived for 60 years because it's not very good. Mm-hmm. And that might be a hard pill to swallow. I don't know. Because there's kind of like this, like, legend around Funny Girl, I feel. Or there was for me. And then when you kind of see what it actually is, you're like,
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't stand up the way you would want it to.
Well, I also think it has that reputation because this is the first time in 60 years that it's been revived.
Right.
So no one has seen this show on stage for 60 years.
Well, there's been, like, regional productions, but not
sure,
on Broadway.
But, like, critically acclaimed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And kind of, for 60 years, the, like, legend of Barbra Streisand has only been building.
100%.
And yeah, it did not serve the show for so many comparisons to Barbra. And it definitely did not serve Beanie Feldstein, who's playing Fanny Bryce, for these numerous comparisons to Barbra.
I mean, the night Funny Girl opened, we were sending reviews back and forth to each other, yeah. And wow, were they harsh. Like, yes. So harsh on Beanie specifically. And at the same time, it was like praise for Barbra because, like, that's what it seemed. And if you were to not know what was going on, you'd be like, sorry, did Barbra Streisand reprise this role on Broadway? Because that's how much everyone was talking about
her. It seems not fair, really, for this person's role to be judged, like, directly against this other person. And it's hard to get away from that comparison, but it's also, you know, she is a different person. She is not Barbra. And Barbra is a, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime performer. But, you know, you have to think about what you prioritize in each role and when you're casting someone. And I think when they cast Beanie, they definitely prioritized comedy and, like, not the vocals.
It's tough. It's so tough. And we had this conversation, you know, when we did our Funny Girl episode. This was something we recorded pre-reviews, pre-opening night, pre-everything. And even then, like, we had our concerns vocally, obviously. And, you know, we still have not seen this show. We have read so many terrible reviews. But we've also read, like, kind of mixed positive reviews of, one, the show isn't great, but Beanie is giving it all that she has.
I've also heard just straight up good reviews of Beanie, you know, just saying she's performing, like, you know, she's playing Fanny Bryce. She's not doing a Barbara imitation.
Yes. And then just to go into Funny Girl a little bit more, like, two other people that we had at least nominated at one point.
Or talked
like,
about.
I had Jane Lynch on my list for Rose Bryce, and I did see a tweet today being like, well, they went with Jane, but not Jane Lynch. They went Jane Houdyshell, so there you go on that one. And then, obviously, Ramin, who's playing Nick Arnstein. And I don't know 100%, but he did get COVID, like, very soon after the opening, so I'm not sure that, like, everyone got to see him. Not that I think he was going to be nominated for the lead, because
that category was pretty stacked.
And we did find out very close to nominations that he would have been considered in lead, which was also a question that we had when we recorded it back in February. But, I do think, I mean, we'll get to it when we get to the revival category, but it is kind of shocking to me to only receive one nomination after, like, such an anticipated return to Broadway.
Yes, I think a lot of people maybe ended up surprised in saying, oh, this show does not have the substance that we thought it did. Even with a new book by Harvey Fierstein. It's also, I've heard, 2 hours and 50 minutes, which...
Oh my God,
I'm sorry,
I know.
That's too long. It's too long. It's just too long. For a show that people are already questioning, that's too long.
It's too long.
Give us a good 75 minutes like Six is giving us, okay? That's the number one thing about Six. You're in, you're out, you're out when you're still having a good time. You're not, like, checking your watch.
Even the movie was, like, over 2:30, right?
And yes.
I thought that was
we were
too
like,
long.
Oh God.
So, yeah, it's hard... The intention span is just, like, not there for a 250 show. I'm sorry, it's not there. Speaking on vocal performances, Katrina Lang is a no-show in this category.
Snub. I think this is probably the biggest snub of the...
I 100% agree.
To me.
And I only say speaking of vocal performances because I, and I quote, said in our Way Too Early Tony nominations, when you were like, wow, could this be Katrina? And then you ended up giving your vote to Beanie, which a mistake then.
Well, who did...
But I said, I've heard that Katrina is the weakest link in this show. And it seems that what I heard might have been correct. But I think this goes back to, again, the Tony nominators and when they saw Company. And if they saw Company when it opened, which was very early in the reopening of Broadway... I don't know that they got the Katrina Link performance that is currently happening in May 2022. I just don't think that they had it. And again, speaking on the, like, quick interview I saw with Matt Doyle earlier today, he said, like, I wasn't even the same person when we reopened on Broadway. We had so much life to live in these last 2 years that, like, I'm not giving the performance I was giving when we reopened. I'm a whole new Jamie now. So I would think that she's a whole new Bobby now.
Absolutely.
And it is shocking to me that, you know, a show that... received 9 nominations, multiple in acting categories, including Best Revival of a Musical, and to not have your star get a nomination is just kind of like a slap in the face.
Did you see what Patty said?
Patty, I was going to say, do you have Patty's tweet or whatever she said?
I saw it on Twitter, Broadway Bob. He shared it on TikTok, but let me find it.
She was doing an interview, like, everyone gave their... comments on their nominations this morning, and I love what she said because I think
she's
like
absolutely
class act, Patti LuPone.
She's absolutely right. So here's Patti LuPone's quote where her response to being nominated. She says, "I'm thrilled for Marianne, Chris, Matt, Jen, and the entire cast and creators of Company. We are led every night by the beautiful, soulful, and extremely talented Katrina Link." Which, like, I'm crying here because, like, it's true, you know. Katrina is, as you would say in the movies, like, number one on the call sheet. So she, like, sets the tone for the show every night. And even if she's not nominated, she's the leader every night. And, you know, things happen, whatever. But for other people to get honored, but for her not to be, is interesting. And she's another one who I think Katrina, like, is a beautiful singer. But I think when casting her, they prioritized acting over the vocals.
I mean, remember the board's conversation of who was going to play Bobby in Company?
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy. And she found her way on a list. And immediately you and I were like, I don't know if I see it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, her standout performance, she won, right, for the band's visit?
She did win for the band's visit.
And I think that role suits her so well. She
is... Yes.
gorgeous in that show. I've like publicly said on this podcast that I would pay to see her sing Omar Sharif. Like, that's how good
speaking of funny
she
girl.
Was in that show. Yeah, exactly. But it is interesting that, like, was she miscast vocally for the show? But then I also read a lot today about, like, Bobby's being snubbed. And someone said when Company was revived with Raul Esparza, like, he didn't win.
He did not win.
He lost.
To David Hyde Pierce.
David Hyde Pierce. Yeah.
I also think, and as a lover of the show Company, I think Bobby's such an interesting character because he or she is almost like the straight man to everyone else's kind of craziness. So yes. Bobby, the character, will enter into the scenario with these couples who are going off the wall, giving these like star performances, and Bobby is just reacting to them. And Bobby has their own moments, like, you know, of course, Marry Me a Little or Being Alive or, you know, other things, but they're kind of almost just absorbing the energy from all these other wacky characters. So when you have Jen Simard being crazy, Bobby is kind of the straight person to that craziness. When you have Patti LuPone singing Ladies Who Lunch or Elaine Stritch singing Ladies Who Lunch, you just have Bobby sitting and watching and being an audience member. So even though they are the star, they are kind of like reflecting star power onto the other characters.
So yeah, I do think of the entire, again, can't speak for the plays because I know that there were some snubs there. But for me, this was the biggest surprise and snub. But then also,
especially as a previous Tony winner.
100%.
Yeah.
Biggest surprise, Karen Cusack. Like, where did you come from?
You know what? Shout out. Shout out.
I saw a tweet today being like, this is justice for Bright Star.
Justice for Bright Star. Yeah. You know, when you get nominated for a show that's closed, particularly a musical, the plays, this happens more often because the life cycle of a play is shorter. But to get nominated for a musical that has closed months ago,
We have two in this category.
One we kind of knew for sure was going to happen, and the other one a little more uncertain. But, you know, I'm happy for her. I'm really happy.
Well, it's interesting because was it like 2 days ago they released that play for
kind
singing?
Yeah, Friday maybe. So like kind of the end of the eligibility period. Yeah, they released that video of her singing the song Why. And she sounds beautiful. I don't think I'll go back to it, to be honest.
No, and I have not even attempted the Flying Over Sunset cast recording. It is available, but I've heard, you know, a wild show with a gorgeous cast recording. This is a Tom Kitt score, Tom Kitt with Michael Corey. So I feel like you're kind of like, you know what you're in for with Tom Kitt. And it's super interesting. Yes. I mean, orchestration-wise, like, but like, I've heard that the orchestrations are like stunning in this show.
It was at Lincoln Center, so I'm always picturing this like beautiful sweeping orchestrations in Vivian Beaumont.
On LSD though, so you know. But she was like our sixth spot, and always was. Like, there was always you can't count out Carmen, and we should have never counted out Carmen. But, you know, we thought that the four revivals were locks, and we were completely wrong. Someone else that I had on my nominations, and she didn't make it into your final list, was Mare Winningham for Girl from Another Country.
Yeah.
And I also think, and I thought back in February that, like, she was also someone that we couldn't count out right away because that is such a showy role.
Absolutely.
In that musical.
We had her in our 2020.
I thought she won for me.
She might have. She might have. We had her in our 2020. But we, you know, there were other performances that took priority, and we should have looked back to our former selves.
I looked back to my former self.
Sorry, I didn't. But I did pick Jacquina.
You did.
I picked Jacquina Kalukango, and this is looking good for her. I don't know if she's going to win, but it's looking good for her.
As we said with Best Actor, it being between Miles and Jaquel, I think we are between a Sharon D. Clarke for Carolina Change or a Jacquina Kalukango for Paradise Square.
Yeah. I still think it's going to be Sharon.
Sharon?
We haven't even talked about Sutton Foster, sorry, but she's not winning this, I don't think.
I totally forgot she was on this list. Wow, sorry, Sutton. We'll come to you in 1 second. But Sharon D. Clarke is interesting because, as we had just said, you know, Carolina Change closed. They finished their limited run. There are some talks that, like, it is kind of surprising that no one made it into the featured actress category from Carolina Change as well. They did get three nominations for this season. But Sharon Day Clarke is coming back to Broadway. She is doing Death of a Salesman with Andre DeShields and someone else. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but I know that it's like really exciting.
Wow, what is his name? Wendell Pierce?
Yes, you're correct.
I was like featuring his face.
So the fact that that was, again, announced like 3 days before the cutoff of the nominations, I was like, okay, so we're bringing her name back into the conversation. I see this.
And you can never forget, she won the Olivier Award for this part. When, in 2018, 2019?
I still think that, like, and again, we've talked about, like, Lot's Wife. Her performance of Lot's Wife, give her every award. Like,
it's... That role is really, really a great role. It's a great role. And so if you're cast in it, you know, we already know that you are great. And anyone kind of taking on that role is I can't count them out here. I think I'm going to, as my winner, sorry to Sutton, I'm going to pick Sharon Day Clarke.
I am also sticking with my original winner of Sharon Day Clarke.
Okay, well, I can't stick with my original winner of Beanie Feldstein. I had faith. I love the movie Booksmart.
You know, Beanie will get there one day. Just this show is not the time. Yes, Sutton nominated for Music Man, and that's really all I can contribute to this conversation.
Yes. Another tweet I had seen, I can't even remember who it was. But they were talking about the interesting thing of casting women in roles that vocally don't have it. And they were talking about, not don't have it at all, but for these parts. And they were talking about Sutton, they were talking about Beanie, and they were talking about Katrina Lenk. And
two of the three didn't get nominated.
Two of the three did not get nominated. And I just think that is kind of interesting. But to me, the most kind of jarring one is kind of Sutton. Because isn't that role for a soprano, and then they cast Sutton in it, who is not a soprano?
Thinking more about the Music Man, I think that was Hughes, like, I want her in this.
And oh, I believe that.
And I don't care, like, if she can sing it, I want her in it.
I believe that. I think Hugh got a lot of say in the casting of the Music Man. And Sutton is, like, a theater star. You know, she has... like, name recognition as a theater star, but also as an actual star. So,
and also, like, those tickets are still upwards of $400 for orchestra. They are selling out all the time. Oh my god, me either. But, like, they're selling fine. So they did what they needed to do, regardless of, like, the awards recognition that they might may or may not get. Like, they don't need it.
They did the cost opportunity analysis here.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, we can sell for this with these actors, and we don't necessarily need, I mean, they got the award nominations, but they don't necessarily need, you know, these other things. Yeah, it's quite interesting.
So those are our acting categories. We are going to go through a couple more things more briefly. We're not going to get into it as heated as we did before. But before we move on, and I cannot believe that I didn't start our episode this way. Tony nominated Diana the Musical.
Everybody. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Although we don't agree with who was nominated for the Tony, but Diana was nominated for costumes, which whatever, like, we obviously do not condone anything that William Ivy Long has done, but you cannot say
that we support
those costumes
the cast
in
saying that they did not, were not willing to
100%.
Work with him. But
those costumes are stunning.
That wedding dress.
And also,
that act one
Tony nominated.
Diana. I love Diana.
I mean, if they, like, while we're at the Best Actress category, like, if they wanted to honor Diana in one way, it should have been Gina DeWall.
A snub. A snub for her.
A true snub. And I believe
she was underestimated.
I believe we discussed it in our Oscars episode a few episodes back, but, like, darling of the Razzies. Just need to say it again.
She was.
Okay, let's move on very quickly to direction. I don't think there were any snubs or surprises in this category for me.
So my category is slightly different than what we had predicted. So I had James Lapine and Michael Mayer in this category. James Lapine for Flying Over Sunset and Michael Mayer for Funny Girl. Funny Girl, we know why that's not there. And Flying Over Sunset, just, you know, it's already closed. And it also middling kind of critically, so I understand why he wasn't there.
And like, he's been nominated before.
Yes, absolutely. He's got enough.
For better things.
So replaced by Stephen Brackett for A Strange Loop.
Love those
and
nominations.
Lucy Moss and Jamie Armitage for Six. So
love though that
crazy
nomination.
That I left out like the two front runners.
I'm pretty sure I had Lucy Moss in, but I don't think I had Stephen Brackett. I know that we talked about Stephen Brackett, but
absolutely.
I don't think I had him in my final list. I think in February we thought that this was Marianne Elliott's award to lose.
And I still think so.
It might be. However, I do think Stephen Brackett is more in the conversation
sure.
than he's ever been before.
Sure. The other nominees in this category are Christopher Wheeldon, who we've already talked about, for MJ,
yeah.
and Connor McPherson for Girl from the North Country, who
just like... Again, we discussed this back in February, but in 2020, I'm pretty sure he was my winner.
I think you're right. Me too. I can't believe we spent 2+ years talking about freaking Girl from the North Country.
I can't believe we're still talking about
it. We're still
talking
about the show. I cannot wait to be done with Girl from the North Country. I agree. Between Stephen Brackett and Marianne Elliott, I think I'm still going to go Marianne Elliott, though, because
yeah,
this is the last Sondheim production with like Stephen's influence on it. So this might be maybe more impactful in the Best Revival category, but I don't think we can count it out for that reason. And I also think like Marianne Elliott kind of as a visionary for this show and her vision in the translation of it to changing the gender of these characters and kind of modernizing it in this way. I think like so much credit is owed to her for that. So that's why I'm 100%. Still with her on this category.
Also, if you happen to go see Company in the month of May, there are 4 Stephen Sondheim playbills right now. I'm pretty sure it's like a different one every day. They're rotating between the 4. So there are 4 collectible playbills right now, which is very exciting. Okay, moving on to... I think score is kind of an interesting category.
Mm.
Wow, remember when you nominated A Little Prince?
I did. Well, I don't know. I think what got in instead of A Little Prince is Paradise Square. So.
And Flying Over. Oh, no, we talked about Flying Over Sunset.
I had picked Flying Over Sunset as a nominee.
Yeah, we had the exact same nominations. I remember that. Oh, except for A Little Prince. I didn't have that. You know, I had Doubtfire, I'm pretty sure.
You had Doubtfire. Well, is that more embarrassing, maybe?
It's more embarrassing.
So the nominees are Toby Marlowe and Lucy Moss for Six, Tom Kitt and Michael Corey for Flying Over Sunset, Jason Howland and Nathan Tyson and Massey Asare for Paradise Square, Jason Robert Brown and Amanda Green for Mr. Saturday Night, and Michael R. Jackson for A Strange Loop.
I don't know that we need to go any further than to say that this is Michael R. Jackson's award for A Strange Loop.
Okay. Here's what I'm going to say. I think
I
know
it's between Six and A Strange Loop, but I want to talk about Six and Orchestrations because I think that might be the only place where they can win.
Okay. Yes. I think I agree that it's still going to be A Strange Loop, but the stars of the season are A Strange Loop and Six, right? And I wonder if they're going to...
stars in the season in like...
New musicals.
Yes.
New musicals. And so I'm wondering if they're going to want to split score and best new musical and give one to one.
I think the split is orchestration because score is still like coveted to me.
It's very stressful because I really like we've given nothing to Six. We didn't even talk about the Six snub from the actresses. It's not even a snub because I don't know if they were ever going to get nominated. But
here, a hot take. In my opinion, it is not a snub. None of them deserve to be nominated because that is, to me, as I said, if they wanted an ensemble award, they would get the ensemble award. There was not one person that they were going to campaign for to give them a best lead actress nomination. And as far as I'm concerned, it is better to nominate none of them than to nominate one of them.
Yes, I don't know how you, in that show where it feels quite equal between them, to go in and pick one out as the one that you're going to elevate above the others to get a nomination. And I think the show probably prioritized other categories and nominations over trying to get that a nomination and lead actress, because that's the only category they were eligible in for acting. Whereas other shows have, you know, multiple opportunities in multiple categories. This was the only category they were eligible for nomination.
I think a surprising one was like choreography nomination for Six, because I'm not sure that like we had even had on our radar.
I do think the choreography is great, but it is quite simple in a good way.
Yeah. But while we're talking about score, something else, again, on the day of Tony eligibility cutoff was released, and that is the Six Broadway live cast album.
Yes.
Now, I think you and I have very mixed thoughts on this, but it's interesting because Shara, who has been listening to it, like, nonstop as someone that did not see this show, is, like, obsessed with it.
It captures the energy. It really captures the energy.
Yes. I think, and I think you said it right, for the most part, it's great. Like, when you hear the intro to Ex-Wives, it brings me back to when we were sitting in the audience in Chicago. When you hear the Mega Six for the first time on a recorded, like, thing,
to me,
it is so exciting.
To me, the moment is Six. Not even, like, not even the Mega Six, the moment is Six. That's where I get hype when I listen to that cast recording. But yeah. I do think it is a live recording of people's live vocals. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'll say about that.
No, and I 100% agree. I will say I love the fact that they added a additional Heart of Stone for all of the alternates.
Yeah.
When have we ever seen on a cast recording? Really, I don't think ever. And also to, you know, have the ladies in waiting be on that cast recording because it's recorded live. We got all of that outro stuff happening live. Yes, the outro. They get their own outro. So I think, like, it is... Again, if you have not seen this show, I think it is probably a perfect listen. For people that have seen the show, to me, there is nothing like the magic that we felt for the first time listening to those songs. And it's so interesting. I was talking to Char about this the other day, and I would never take back the experience we had of only knowing... We had only listened to Ex-Wives, and maybe like twice. Like, that was all I knew from that show. So to walk into Six completely blind is... Like, I was a wild experience.
Walking on air leaving that show. I was so happy.
We were skipping out of the theater. I've never had an experience like that. So I would be obviously thrilled if Six did win for score. Like, we've talked so many episodes of how much we love that music. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I know, but I think it's like number two. I think it's such a clever score, the way it's so referential to pop music. The way that they clearly are inspired and used it so well as like part of the storytelling. And maybe like that's where in orchestrations, because they orchestrated it to sound like these other artists' music to tell the story. The orchestrations are so much a part of telling that story.
And also the like Renaissance-esque of the orchestrations. Yeah. Like that's
it sounds like Beyonce and creative. Also like Renaissance. It sounds like, you know, it's so smart. It's so clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know we've picked it for nothing tonight, but I like want to give
this
it
this show. I've been obsessed
so
with
good.
For 3 years,
and
right?
I think
like,
it like
been obsessed with the show.
I think it deserves.
I know, and I think what was like magic for Six was obviously the Oliviers when they won like so many awards at the Oliviers, and I think if this show opened in 2020 and nothing ever happened, we wouldn't be having this conversation. No. It would have been Best Musical. It would have been all of these things because A Strange Loop wouldn't have been there yet. Like, it just wouldn't have been there. This is 2 years later.
I think the, like, kind of saving grace here is I think it's a huge commercial success. I don't see it closing anytime soon. I think it's going to run for a long time.
100% agree with that. And because I'm going to New York, I've been looking at the TKTS app and, you know, shows like Funny Girl showing up on TKTS, A Strange Loop showing up on TKTS.
Yeah.
I think that's all about to change after the Tony Awards happen. We have like maybe...
I do think A Strange Loop has a harder audience to find. It's just a little bit of a harder audience to find.
Very true. But Six has never been there. No. It has never been on TKTS. It is very difficult to find a discounted ticket at this moment.
When we were supposed to go in April 2020, we were like, we're going to have to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go rush this show.
Five? We thought like three. Like, we were sleeping on the streets of New York.
We were every day on the Broadway World boards be like, okay, what time do people show up?
I know. Do you think I can get my brothers to sleep on the street for this?
Yeah. Just make Tyler do it.
Well, actually, so I'm going to New York with my brothers because my younger brother is moving. And Tyler said, you know, like, what are we going to see? And I was talking about Six and I was like, I don't know if you guys would like it. He was like, well, we're going to listen to it for 9 hours driving. So we might as well see it on stage. And I was like, you know what? You're right.
Yes. I'm going to commit to Six here.
To Strange Loop. Six?
I'm going to commit to Six here. I'm going to commit to Six here. I think... I'm going to commit to them. They're going to split Best Musical and Best Score and kind of honor the like two star shows in those two big categories.
I swear to God, if this is...
But I know Michael R. Jackson. It's so hard, but I'm just going to commit.
No, I'm not even talking about Michael R. Jackson. I'm talking about what if this is Paradise Square.
No, sorry. Sorry, no. 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 No.
I am giving it to A Strange Loop because of Michael R. Jackson. Like, literally. But, and...
I want to see him make a speech. I want to see Michael R. Jackson make a speech.
Oh, he'll be making a speech for Best Book. Don't you worry.
You're right. Best Book of a Musical. He'll get that for sure. For sure.
I mean, not, we're not going to go into this category of Best Book. But a lot of people were talking about Six being snubbed for Best Book. I do think if we're talking about the weakest part of the show, it is the book.
I think they have like a very like strong conceit of the show. And, you know, they're kind of like boxed in by it a little bit,
yeah,
in a good way. Like they're within strict confines of this being like a concert.
Yeah. So I mean, we love Six. Like I will always love Six.
Yeah.
So
after I saw it,
it will be said if it doesn't get anything this season.
After we saw it for the first time, literally every person I saw, they're like, "Oh, anything you like recently?" I'm like, "I would talk Six. About Six." My friend, my other friend, would be like, "Oh my god, I can't believe you're telling people about the show again." And I'm like, "Yeah, I am." Because it's amazing. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, exactly. Or like someone will be like, "Oh, I'm going to New York. What should I see?" I'm like, Six. Like, what else would you see? But now my answer is like, oh, if you can get tickets to A Strange Loop, go to A Strange Loop. Have we made it? Have we made it?
We've made it to Best Musical and Best Revival. Here we are.
Oh, God. Okay. let's talk about the revivals first, because yeah. Never in my wildest dreams did I think with a 4-season revival would they leave one off.
I thought they were going to leave the Music Man off. I made us pick.
No, well, and at a moment we were like, oh, maybe Caroline or Change. We were so wrong.
Yes. I mean, you know, at the time, I would never have picked Funny Girl. But then if you asked me like 2 weeks ago, I was like, yeah, Funny Girl's not getting this. Sorry.
Well, it's interesting because Time Out puts out their Tony nominations, which is like the Time Out New York something nominations, and I believe that came out on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And the nominations came out on Monday, and they had Funny Girl and Beanie off the list, and I was like, oh my god, I think we're about to have a three musical revival this year.
So the revivals nominated are Caroline or Change, Company, and The Music Man, with Funny Girl being the only one left out.
It's just so mean. But at the same time, like, if it's based on, like, if it truly is what the critics said, Beanie aside, if the show is, like, literally just a bad show, then I get it.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of criticism has kind of been unfairly centered on Beanie, where it turns out none of it, like, all of the pieces of it together
just don't
are work. Also... Like, it's not just her puzzle piece, it's all the puzzle pieces that don't fit. But she's kind of been at, like, right at the center of it.
I think, though, in terms of revival, I think we stand where we stood. I still think this is Companies to Lose.
I absolutely agree. I think, one, it's a reinterpretation of the show, whereas Carolina Change and Music Man are fairly, like, faithful revivals.
And one of them is still, like, kind of questionable. Like, Music Man is still, like, question mark beside
yes,
it, you know?
Faithful, like, Caroline or Change is faithful in, like, a great way, and Music Man is faithful in a boring way.
Yes.
Whereas Company is, like, exciting and new and fresh and fun, and, yeah, I agree that it's
the way that, like, I am dying to see those sets in person, like, that, it's just, like,
kind of
all
like
around.
Alice in Wonderland imagery of, like, the tiny doors and the giant balloons and the tiny balloons.
Yes, the box, like, everything.
Yeah.
I just think, like, in terms of those, again, like, three shows, like, it is the most well-rounded, most interesting, most, like, impactful all-around performances. So... Yeah, I don't think Music Man has a chance here at all. I like Caroline or Change, like maybe has a chance, but like very
small. It's also
slightly.
Closed. It's also closed, so voters haven't necessarily seen it.
Although we did hear the like roundabout production was stunning.
I'm sure it really was, and like when we got to see
it, was stunning
it,
when we saw it. Yeah, like,
we saw it early 2020 at Toronto production, starring past guest of the podcast Vanessa Sears, starring Julie Black. Really, really beautiful show. But yeah, it was limited run. It is closed. and it's maybe just like a slightly more serious, where I think Company is more of like a fun time. It's more of a party. That's a great Tiny Desk concert too. That's a good Tiny Desk.
Oh yeah, that one is really, and they're at like a bar, I want to say. It's really fun.
Are they at a bar? Are they in like the lobby?
Maybe they're in the lobby, but there's the balloons are there.
Yeah,
that's all that
matters. Of course, lots of balloons. Yeah, it's really great. Best new musical. So okay, six nominations. Six.
Yes. Instead of five. Six nominations. So Girl from the North Country, MJ, which I quote, said in February, MJ will not make its way onto a best new musical list.
Wow.
I was wrong. Mr. Saturday Night, Paradise Square, six. Sorry, this is a strange loop.
Yeah, I think A Strange Loop is about to win this. I don't, and this is who we picked before, but I think A Strange Loop is about to win this. Again, the number two would be six here for me.
I don't know if the number two is six, though, in terms of the general public.
Who would you think, if you had to rank the likelihood of winning, you put A Strange Loop one, who do you put two?
Paradise Square.
Are you insane? Sorry.
It got nominated for Best Book of a Musical.
Yeah, that's actually crazy. Sorry. I've heard that the book is the worst part.
It got nominated for choreography, book, score.
I know.
Like,
apparently there's a lot of like tap dancing in Paris
Square. There's 10 nominations for this show. If we're talking about in terms of number of nominations, yes, Paradise Square is number two for me.
The thing is, we have to remember the nominating committee is 29 people. The voting is hundreds/thousands of people. They're not the same. They're not the same.
I know, but there are so many people that are, so many people are like, six is a concert, it's not a musical.
You're right. And they're wrong.
So many people.
And they are wrong.
I know. Don't get me wrong. In my heart, it's A Strange Loop, and like, very small underneath is six.
Yes.
It's like right there. For
the storytelling conventions of both of these, are so smart. Think about this year's Oscars, where Coda got three nominations.
Wild.
And won every single one.
And as much as I love Coda,
that was crazy. That was crazy.
So, you know what would be crazier? Paradise Square winning.
No, sorry, that's not happening. It's not happening. It's not happening.
I agree. This is A Strange Loop, but I just think that, like,
it's fun to speculate
what
we've
seen today. What we've seen today in terms of nominations is wild for Paradise Square. So I really can't count anything.
That was
right
the biggest
now.
Shock that how much love Paradise Square got. Maybe Garth has a lot of friends. He made them in prison. Became like well connected in prison.
You know what? I hope Garth Drabinski is listening to this episode. Right,
yeah, now. I'm gonna send it personally to Garth.
Okay, like almost an hour and a half into this episode,
I have finished my can, so I've been getting loose over. I felt myself getting loose. Okay.
Is there anything else that you want to discuss for these nominations?
I don't know.
I would like to discuss the joint snub of Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick.
They battled through COVID to get through this round of Plaza Suite.
The way that Sarah Jessica Parker went on the night of Matthew Broderick's COVID diagnosis because she didn't test positive in that moment.
They
live
together.
You know what?
I presume they share a bed. And yet... they're like,
you know what? They kind of seem like people that would sleep separately, though.
Maybe. Or maybe they were like, oh, for the run, we'll like sleep in separate bedrooms just in case this exact scenario happens. Didn't happen.
They just extended, though. So if you're interested in seeing Plaza Suite, it's now running till July. So.
Who would I like to talk about? I think Company is going to win set design for Bunny Christie. I think that is their category to lose.
I did read, though, again... 10 nominations for MJ, but like Derek McLean's sets are apparently great. So, and he's a crowd fave.
Yes, I think MJ's gonna win choreography, like we've talked about, Christopher Wheeldon. I think, you know, MJ, like Michael Jackson's dancing is so like enshrined in like who he is. And I think like Christopher Wheeldon is gonna win that.
Just out of curiosity, because we don't really know anything, but what do you think is going to win Best Play?
Okay, let me look at the nominees. Give me a sec. Should we pick this?
I have an answer. Face off nothing.
I'm going to say the Lehman Trilogy.
I agree. Yeah, it's the Lehman Trilogy. Again, like, plays wild this year. Like, the only thing that we kind of, like, knew besides, like, For Colored Girls was... The Minutes getting nominated for Best Play, but literally nothing else. That doesn't really happen.
And let's not talk about the ending of The Minutes.
I know. We both know the ending of The Minutes. This is a show I will not see. And I believe when we talked to Tim from Broadway Up Close, he told us that the last show he saw before the shutdown was The Minutes. And I remember him loving it and saying that it was wild. And now we know why.
It was wild.
And I just need to put on record here that the way that Armie Hammer starred in this musical just means everything in 2022.
It's really funny. Okay, what about Best Revival Play? Best Revival Play.
Oh, I don't even know what's nominated. Hold on.
Based on absolutely nothing, I'm going with How I Learned to Drive. What do you think?
I heard it's great.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, Best Revival is American Buffalo for Color Girls, How I Learned to Drive, Take Me Out, Trouble in Mind. I mean, I am going to go for Color Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough.
Great.
But that's
this is based on nothing.
Literally nothing.
Based on nothing. Yeah. Based on nothing.
So that is our thoughts on the 2022 Tony nominations. If you are interested in participating, and I believe it's audience rewards content.
Oh my god.
If you fill out their ballot and you get all 26 categories correct, they are giving away 75 free tickets to you.
Yes, it's one prize of 75 tickets. Yeah, I think that's so funny. Like, what are you going to do?
I will be entering the contest.
Yeah, absolutely. It might be open to only Americans. I feel like it was only open to Americans in the past.
I will still be entering the contest.
Tyler's address.
Oh, my God, I will. I'm going to enter off of Tyler's address.
Yeah, so like I'm like, who could use 75 Broadway tickets? We could use 75 Broadway tickets.
But I just am like so curious on how that gets delivered to you. Like, is it a voucher? Is there an expiry date?
Because right, do you have to like let them know every time you want to see something and then they buy you the ticket?
So if anyone's listening to us in the States and is interested in winning 75 tickets, enter this audience rewards. And with that, we will all be watching the Tony Awards on June 12th to see what happens, to see if our predictions come true.
Should we go live on TikTok? That's what we were discussing.
I'm going to say yes. We'll be together. So, we'll figure it out. I did read, and this is great for us, that it is this time simultaneously streaming on CBS and Paramount.
Oh, that's great. That's
so
really great.
Congrats to Canada.
Because we struggled last time. Canada really had a hard time last time.
So yeah, that's our thoughts on the Tony nominations, and it is now time for our obsession of the week.
My obsession of this week, you know, a musical that we love and has won every Tony Award in our hearts is Diana the Musical. And you might be thinking, when are they going to shut up about Diana the Musical? Because we've been talking about Diana the Musical for as long as we've been talking about Girl from the North Country. And while I'm over that, I will never be over Diana the Musical.
But can I just say, like, when we discussed Diana in 2020, we did not care at all.
No, we did not understand, we did not appreciate the camp that they were going to be giving us.
We didn't know.
How could we know? We couldn't know. We should have known, though. and so my obsession is, it's another podcast, one of my favorite comedy podcasts called How Did This Get Made, where they talk about bad movies and they wonder, how did this get made? And they did a live episode about Diana the Musical. And what I really loved about it, and what I love about this podcast, is sometimes they come into these movies with absolutely zero context. And they came into Diana thinking it was a movie and not a live filmed Broadway show. And they really were truly baffled by what they experienced on screen. And while I loved it, I have to say they did not. But it just, hearing their perspectives on this musical, where they really were just baffled by every second, every choice of this show.
I mean, so were we, in a positive way.
And they had like just a great time talking about Diana the Musical. And I just, if you just want a good laugh, highly recommend listening to the How Did This Get Made episode about Diana the Musical. It came out on April 22nd. Then I believe about a week after, they re-released their episode about Harry and Meghan, A Royal Romance, in response to the Diana episode, which is about the Lifetime movie about Harry and Meghan. And that's another
Is this the lion one?
Yes, exactly. The lion one where Diana, like, comes back as a lion. They spent a lot of time talking about that.
I still haven't seen it. I still haven't seen it.
Oh, I had a watch party with my friends. I would also really, really recommend that episode if you just want a good laugh, because that movie is better than it has any right to be.
Oh my god. I mean, in shocking royal news, did you hear that, like, Meghan and Harry are not allowed on the balcony for the Queen's Jubilee? And neither is Prince Andrew. And I'm like, that's rude to put them in the same category as him.
Well, I actually have many thoughts about this. As anyone who knows me will know, I have many thoughts about the royal family. Because even there, so it's the Queen's Jubilee, it's coming up in June, and all the great-grandchildren are going to, like, ride in a carriage together as, like, the kind of the finale of the thing. But, Harry and Meghan's kids won't be there. And I think, like, it's partially the royal family's choice, partially Harry and Meghan's choice. Like, we don't see their kids' faces that very much. And
yeah.
Well, they want them to be in this public place. Like, if they said they want a life, like, stepping back, for them to then go on the balcony would seem counter to that. So
right.
I know you all tuned in for my royal thoughts on Harry and Meghan here. But yeah, I think it's...
If you've made it this far into the episode,
congratulations. Okay, I'm done. Listen to How Did This Get Made, their podcast about Diana the Musical. It's just a good time. It's just a blast. Yeah. So Tara, what's your obsession this week?
Okay, my obsession this week is something that, like, recently came out. Another NPR shout out. The Little Shop of Horrors NPR Tiny Desk Performance. First of all, happy 40th anniversary to Little Shop of Horrors. Conrad Rickamora as Seymour.
Remember how I manifested this?
You manifested this. Steph and I were having a conversation. I feel like, last week, I'm pretty sure it was last week. And we were talking about Seymour's because I was talking to you about the Spring Awakening documentary. We were like, you know, John Groff, whatever, like Jeremy Jordan, whatever. And you're like, you know, I would love to see Conrad Rickamora. And then literally 2 days later, we were blessed with this Tiny Desk.
Yeah.
He is so good.
So
and
charming.
I will say this forever. I think Little Shop of Horrors is like one of the greatest cast recordings maybe of all time. That music is so, so iconic. It is so good. Maybe Alan Menken's like greatest work. Alan Menken is in this Tiny Desk. Also, like, mostly the original cast is still there. Like, Tammy Blanchard's still there. Christian Borle is still there. People that we both saw on stage.
I thought everyone sounded good. I thought Tammy Blanchard sounded really good.
She was so emotional during Suddenly Seymour. But my favorite performance, and I feel like this song is always a standout to me, is Feed Me, Get It. Audrey 2 and Seymour just, like, have such a good back and forth. And it's always that part, the, like, I don't know... Conrad Rickamora killed it.
Love him.
I don't know.
To again, Conrad Rickamora starring in a movie called Fire Island that's coming out this summer.
Soon, it's coming out like pretty soon.
Really soon. I think it's going on Hulu in the States. I don't know where it's going to be released in Canada because we don't have Hulu.
We'll have to see. Yeah.
But it's starring also my other favorite podcast, Las Culturistas. Both Bowen and Matt are starring in it. So I'm really excited for that. My most anticipated movie of the summer with Conrad Rickamora playing Mr. Darcy.
Well, this, like, goes back to the debate that we had with, like, Patrick from the original cast podcast of, like, are Seymour's too hot? And the answer is probably yes.
But, like, but I'm okay with it.
I'm fine with it. It doesn't bother me.
You know, I do think ugly people deserve to be cast in roles, too. But I every person they've cast has brought me joy. Every
and
single one.
Speaking of that, stepping into the role of Seymour, Skylar Astin, another good-looking person.
Great.
So
again, vocals, serving vocals.
Yeah, everybody that has been in this off-Broadway, and, like, it's been running for quite a long time right now, has
pre-pandemic,
like,
to now,
some of the best vocals in the industry right now. So it is never a bad decision to go visit Little Shop of Horrors off-Broadway. I highly recommend it. And if you want a taste of it, watch this NPR Tiny Desk performance, as well as the NPR Strange Loop Tiny Desk performance, because that's the one.
And scream when the monster, the plant, Audrey 2, like, comes towards the audience.
Comes at the audience and, like, shoots, like, ping pong balls or whatever it was. legendary. But yeah, if you have made it to the end of this episode, thank you so much for listening. And as I said, I am going to New York in like 3 days when this comes out. So please tell me what I should go
send
see.
The recos.
I have nothing bought. And also, if you want to follow along on my New York adventures, but also everything podcast related, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Off2BeWayPodcast with the number 2. I will be posting all of the shows that I see, so you will see that then.
And if we bully Tara into making a TikTok, she will.
Yeah, I will do it.
So you can follow us on TikTok at Off2Broadway. You can also subscribe to our podcast anywhere podcasts are found. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and even on YouTube, where you can leave us a comment. And we would love it if you subscribed and gave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
And there is homework for our next episode. If you have not watched Better Nate Than Ever on Disney Plus, now is the time, because we are deep diving into this lovely movie musical.
Mm-hmm.
We had a blast watching it. We had a blast recording this episode. So, yeah, if you have not seen it, go watch it. And you can share your review with us in a couple weeks. And we will see you guys next time.
Bye.